Hello, I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.
It's time to join Jill Bevilacqua, who this week presents a programme by the title of Pilgrims All. Stay tuned and find out why.
Going on pilgrimage, as we all know, is not a practice confined to Christians, as John Adair reminds us in his book, The Pilgrim's Way.
The pilgrim instinct is not peculiar to Christianity. The Hindu, Buddhist and Muslim religions all value these journeys to saints' shrines or some other sacred place.
However, while the Muslim is expected to make his pilgrimage to Mecca at least once in his lifetime, for the Christian it's not an essential duty, but rather a popular and spontaneous expression of feeling and need. There are those, too, who make a pilgrimage because they're in search of an answer to the meaning of existence. There's a play based on some old Turkish tales, which the poet James Elroy Flecker wrote back in the early years of the 20th century. Hassan the confectioner and his friend Ishak the poet decide to leave Baghdad in order to find peace by making the golden journey to Samarkand. This ancient city of Central Asia, now in Uzbekistan, was once one of Central Asia's greatest cultural centres, but later became a byword for oriental riches and exotic romance. As Ishak persuades his friend to make the journey, he says to him, "Prepare for travel." But Hassan answers, "I have no possessions." "O pilgrim, O true pilgrim," exclaims Ishak. And a modern pilgrim, interviewed after making the pilgrimage along the Via Francigena, echoes this sentiment. "It's a gem of the essential," commented 24-year-old Marilena, who had also made the pilgrimage to Santiago de Compostela in 2004.
It helps you to keep what you really need, discarding the superfluous, the useless, or worse still, the truly harmful. And this is valid not only on the practical level, you can't put much in a rucksack, but also, and above all, on the level of values. As you go on, you come to understand what it is that really matters, and you stick to that.
In our play, Ishak asks Hassan one more time if he really has nothing to take with him on the pilgrimage. And Hassan admits that he does have an old carpet. Ishak is ecstatic. It's the perfect accompaniment.
"You shall stretch it out upon the desert when you say your evening prayer, and it shall be a little meadow in the waste of sand."
And then Ishak calls his friend to listen to the bells.
"You hear? The camels are being driven to the gate of the moon. At midnight starts the great summer caravan for the cities of the far northeast, divine Bokhara and happy Samarkand. It's a desert path as yellow as the bright seashore. Therefore, the pilgrims call it the Golden Journey."
The caravan, however, is mainly composed of merchants who are clamouring to be off.
"Away! For we are ready to a man. Our camels sniff the evening and are glad. Lead on, O master of the caravan. Lead on, the merchant princes of Baghdad."
But the master has noticed a group he doesn't recognise and asks them, "Who are ye, in rags and rotten shoes, blocking up the way?" Tranquilly, Ishak answers him.
"We are the pilgrims, master. We shall go always a little further. It may be beyond that last blue mountain barred with snow, across that angry or that glimmering sea. White on a throne or guarded in a cave, there lives a prophet who can understand why men were born. But surely we are brave who make the golden journey to Samarkand."
And Hassan, with his one possession, his prayer mat, muses.
"Sweet to ride forth at evening from the wells, when shadows pass gigantic on the sand, and softly through the silence beat the bells along the golden road to Samarkand.
We don't know if Ishak and Hassan found the answer to the riddle of existence, for the play ends as the caravan passes out through the gate and, leaving the city behind, disappears into the desert night. But what matters is not always finding the answer, possessing the certainty. The important thing is to make the search. All this eastern atmosphere may seem out of place, removed from our vision of pilgrimage. Apart from the camels. Yes, the camels. They're always there on our Christmas cards. They may not appear officially in the Gospels, but traditionally they were there on that first Christian pilgrimage. Though the pilgrims didn't know that that was what it was, they were following a star. And let's go with them now and try to recapture the atmosphere of that historic pilgrimage by listening to The Journey of the Magi as T.S. Eliot imagined it, recounted by one of them many years afterwards.
A cold coming we had of it, just the worst time of the year for a journey, and such a long journey. The ways deep and the weather sharp, the very dead of winter. And the camels galled sore-footed refractory, lying down in the melting snow. There were times we regretted the summer palaces on slopes, the terraces, and the silken girls bringing sherbet. Then the camel men, cursing and grumbling and running away and wanting their liquor and women, and the night fires going out, and the lack of shelters, and the cities hostile and the towns unfriendly, and the villagers dirty and charging high prices. A hard time we had of it. At the end we preferred to travel all night, sleeping in snatches, with the voices singing in our ears, saying that this was all folly. Then at dawn we came down to a temperate valley, wet below the snow line, smelling of vegetation, with a running stream and a watermill beating the darkness, and three trees on the low sky, and an old white horse galloped away in the meadow. Then we came to a tavern with vine leaves over the lintel, six hands at an open door dicing for pieces of silver, and feet kicking the empty wineskins. But there was no information. And so we continued and arrived at evening, not a moment too soon, finding the place. It was, you may say, satisfactory. All this was a long time ago, I remember, and I would do it again, but set down this. Were we led all that way for birth or death? There was a birth, certainly. We had evidence and no doubt. I had seen birth and death, but had thought they were different. This birth was hard and bitter agony for us, like death, our death. We returned to our places, these kingdoms, but no longer at ease here in the old dispensation, with an alien people clutching their gods. I should be glad of another death.
When we started out on our first pilgrimage, you may remember hearing those lines by Sir Walter Raleigh from his poem The Passionate Man's Pilgrimage at the Point of Death, in which he used all the images of the traditional pilgrim's equipment. The scallop shell, symbol of the shrine of St. James of Compostela in Spain, and which was originally worn to show that the pilgrim had completed a journey to that shrine, but which became the symbol of pilgrimage in general in the Middle Ages and beyond. Then the staff, which could be used not only for support, but if the need arose, for defence. The scrip or bag for food, and the bottle for water. The gown would be a long cloak over a tunic. In his poem, Raleigh, who was due to be executed in the morning, is preparing for death. His pilgrimage is the one we will all have to make one day.
Give me my scallop shell of quiet, my staff of faith to walk upon, my scrip of joy, immortal diet, my bottle of salvation, my gown of glory, hope's true gauge, and thus I'll take my pilgrimage.
Raleigh may have been preparing for death, but in fact the things he asks for, we might well ask for too, whenever we're about to make a pilgrimage. Quiet, faith, joy are qualities essential for a successful pilgrimage. The glory is the eternal crown awaiting the pilgrim, of which hope is the gauge or pledge. We could do worse than recite this prayer when we next set out on pilgrimage. Give me my scallop shell of quiet, my staff of faith to walk upon, my scrip of joy, immortal diet, my bottle of salvation, my gown of glory, hope's true gauge, and thus I'll take my pilgrimage.
Our thanks there go to Jill Bevilacqua for this inspirational programme. Thanks for joining me. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.